Welcome to the Corporate Corner. My name is Mats Andersson.
And I'm Mariel Green Andersson.
We'll share with you conversations with people from around the world about their corporate experiences.
At TCC, we look forward to together creating community.
Welcome to episode 17 of the Corporate Corner. Today's guest is a non-corporate person. Bert Mulemann from Virginia, from Charlottesville in Virginia, is our guest today. And Bert has spent a large part of his life in a non-conformist, non-corporate way. He traveled the world. He took the job that he needed to do to survive at when he was traveling. And he always had a shelf life, as he says, on his job. He knew when he started how long he was going to do it. And then he continued the travel, and now recently Bert has been living in Czech Republic, and he studied here. He just took a degree here, and he's also working on a project currently, which is a portable off-the-grid washing facility that could help in larger camps, refugee camps, or if there's a natural disaster. And he's talking about that in the conversation, and maybe that will become his corporate legacy one day. Who knows? So very welcome to Bert Mulemann, and hope you will enjoy it. So welcome to the Corporate Corner, Bert. Happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You are literally sitting in the Corporate Corner now. I wanted to have you on because I'm not sure I'm right in it, but I had the impression that you're a little bit the antithesis to the corporate world. You're nearly more or less my age, and you just finished your university studies here in Czech, where you did a degree here. And you, I think you're, how would you describe yourself?
I'm a nonconformist. I've never really followed any other path than sort of my whims. Until I got here for the school that I just finished, I really was just taking on pretty much any job that I could. I probably had 20 different jobs, from being a sous chef to being a photographer to being a photo editor, to being a dishwasher, to teaching English. And I've gotten a great opportunity, just completed a great opportunity by finishing this master's degree in landscape planning here in the Czech Republic. Yeah.
So you came to Prague a couple of years ago, and then you wanted to start study, or it's just like it came afterwards, or how did you came up with that idea?
This is the second of 2 4-year stays. My first 4-year stay was after I'd come to take a TEFL course to learn how to teach English.
Yeah.
And that quickly convinced me that I definitely didn't want to teach English. And at that point, after a few years, I went back to the United States and followed through with this opportunity, was able to get in the school and have come back. And it's been a bit of an extended journey. I took an extra year to really round out my thesis.
Yeah, yeah. If we go back, so you are originate from Virginia in the United States?
Yeah, I was born in Richmond, Virginia. I grew up in Virginia Beach. When I was young, though, my parents moved to Europe. This really opened up my awareness. And ever since then, I've always had this urge to go back out on the road. I really have never been able to stay anywhere for more than 4 years.
Okay. If we see, why did you never kind of wanted to study or go into the corporate or be conformist in your young years? So what made you being this rebel, going from living from the day-to-day life?
Well, I'd say, like I mentioned, about half my friends went and did it. When I say that, they went and joined the corporate world. And I never really had much burning desire to do it. I immediately went traveling as soon as I got out of college.
Yeah.
I went to University of Virginia, and within 6 months, I was living and working in France.
Yeah, okay. How did you end up in France from... starting studies in Virginia?
Well, because when I'd been 9 years old, we'd moved to Aix-en-Provence for a year.
Okay.
And that had exposed me to the French lifestyle. And it's something I've always appreciated. My family really has emulated the appreciation of life that the French people really do best, I think. And so I got a job. I was teaching English there.
So you started your studies and then you decided I'd go to France instead?
I completed the University of Virginia.
Okay.
And then literally 6 months later, I was out on the road.
Okay.
And I've really...
What did you study in Virginia?
Fun. I actually studied, I have a degree in English literature.
Okay.
And that's probably another reason that I didn't really join the corporate world, because many of my friends who did had studied economics and international relations, and these, by their nature, lend themselves straight away to good jobs. But I had actually gotten a little money, and so I had a little extra freedom. It was really a burning desire to get out of the country.
Yeah.
I feel I'm a citizen of the world. I really wanted to see more and do more.
So where have you been living? In France and Czech Republic? Where else?
France, Czech Republic, Thailand, India. These are really the main places I've spent extended. And Nepal.
Yeah, Nepal as well.
Yes.
And you always find a job where you went? So kind of, you said like easy jobs or...
When I can't find a job, I make a job up. When I was traveling, I went to Asia in the 90s on two extended trips for a total of about 3.5 years. And I lived out of a backpack. And I was designing and making clothing and jewelry.
Okay.
With the hopes of bringing it back to the United States and selling it.
Did it work?
No, it's still in my mother's garage.
Okay.
And I gave away all the jewelry.
Okay.
But I spent a lot of time, and that was very satisfying work. I designed it and produced, really, about 8 different garments.
Yeah.
I made a woman's leather jacket, men's leather pants, a man's leather jacket, or long trench coat jacket, some wool vests and some embroidered stuff, and some more handmade clothes from really Nepal, India, and actually Pakistan.
But it never really saw the world as a commercial product then.
I guess it was just a little bit too groovy.
Yeah.
I still think that some of the things in the garage that have been well stored are still viable. But yeah, I made 90 garments of one type, of a wool vest embroidered with silk. It was really meant to be a traveling vest. It had the right pockets, and I take a lot of pride in those.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
I'll send you one.
Yeah, good. Did you ever feel some envy for the people in the corporate world that you wanted to be in there and earn money and make career?
Not really, no. They all seemed to be suffering pretty much, and they were really constrained by their jobs. I guess my most corporate moment was I worked in Hollywood for 2 years in production.
Yeah, what did you do there?
I was a PA. But I branched out. I did some location scouting.
What is, for someone who has no clue what you do in Hollywood apart from movies, what is production in Hollywood?
Is pretty much whatever needs to be done, when it needs to be done. And it is about an 18-hour-a-day schedule, usually from anywhere from 2 days to 6 months.
Okay.
But I worked on, my specialties were, I worked on nature films.
Okay.
And I worked on war reenactments. And both of these were very interesting because it's really a logistical enterprise, and that's the part of that operation that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah.
And I actually worked as an apprentice photo editor or film editor on a film called Love and Basketball, which was really a beautiful experience with some great people, and that was a 6-month job. And just about the time I thought I was going to get it together and really my career had gotten momentum after about 2 years, I completely was out of money.
Okay.
Because in the movie business, what happens is you need to be preparing for your very next job while you're on your 18-hour-a-day job. And the logistics of that overwhelmed me. So I had a great long job, you know, in Hollywood, that's like a month. And then I was immediately, 2 or 3 weeks later, out of the money I'd earned.
Okay.
And after cycling through this a few times, it was definitely time to go back to Virginia and sort of collect myself. And that's when I decided that ideally I would just keep traveling. It's not,
what was this back in the 90s or?
This was around, actually, this is after I'd traveled in Asia in the 90s. This was around 2000.
Okay.
And then 9/11 happened, and that just flattened the film industry for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And I was really, I think my most exciting job was I spent a month as a production assistant in Brazil working on the Elf Adventure 2000, which was an adventure race. And I was in charge of 4 trucks full of equipment, and we're literally trying to cross bridges with the river flowing over the bridge, and the trucks are tipping over, and snakes hanging from the trees. And
wow, how do you get a job as a production assistant in Brazil?
It really is nice the way things work like that sometimes. So I had gotten like a 2-day job in Studio City, California, for a real TV commercial, I think. And in the course of gathering things together in the production office, they found out that I spoke French.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the second half of our crew was French.
Okay.
So we were going into film with actual film cameras,
mm-hmm.
and then the French crew was going in with these very rudimentary video cameras, and so I was the sort of liaison between the French and the American production companies.
Oh, okay.
In addition to being the cook and then handling my four trucks with equipment.
Wow. Cool. And how long lasted? Did that last?
That was a month.
A month?
It was nice, too, because it alternated between staying in 5-star hotels and camping in the jungle.
Okay.
So 1 day, 5-star hotel, 3 days, jungle.
Nice.
Back to 5-star hotel. Yeah. It was ideal.
Cool. And this last project you had in your master's thesis is about some portable off-the-grid washing machine or washing...
Well, I did some research.
Yeah.
And it just sort of came together nicely. I was interested in a couple of things, and they fit together really well. But yes, I designed a portable off-grid washing facility for the ever-increasing number of displaced people's camps in the world.
So it is a washing facility in refugee camps and things like that?
It's designed for any sort of disaster relief. So it works both for people that have been uprooted from their homes by, say, a hurricane or a natural disaster.
Yeah.
And equally as well for people that are refugees fleeing any sort of...
So how does it work? With batteries or...?
It uses a Tesla 2 battery, yeah, which I found after researching to be the most effective for my means. And it's basically a portable bamboo modular building that supports a 21 square meter solar panel array, and it can power 3 regular washing machines about 16 hours a day, and it can wash clothes for 480 people per day. That's 750 t-shirts.
Yeah. And do you have is there a prototype of it or
well, I'm actually now trying to build a one-to-one scale model of it.
Yeah.
It definitely has lots more work to do. One of the reasons that, or one of the things about one of these kind of studies, a thesis project, is it suddenly reveals to you the gaps in the knowledge. And the biggest gap in the knowledge that I need to find out about is how to build my modular bamboo triangles, really, is what it's comprised of, and they fit together.
Yeah.
So I need to really complete that before I can get to the one-to-one scale model. But I've had some success lately with a lot of help from a lot of people. But in Charlottesville, Virginia, there's a venue called the Charlottesville Sprint Pavilion. And it's one of those tensile roof buildings with the cloth fabric stretched over, I believe, a steel skeleton. And it's been there for about 12 years, I believe. And they have donated their discarded material to me. And they are cutting it, as I understand, into the pieces that I need. And they will be donating enough of this material for believe, 3 to 4 of the PALF units.
Okay, nice. So maybe you can deploy it to some place needing it.
I'm really eager to get it built, and I think what really this will entail is that I'll probably need to go to Vietnam and or Thailand, where the best people for what I need I've located.
For the bamboo or for?
The bamboo.
For bamboo, okay.
Because each piece is specific to the weight distribution.
Yeah.
So some types of bamboo are better supporting things vertically and some are better horizontally. And I have sort of a recipe. And the last area to really figure out is to how to join them. So the corners are what I'm really needing to figure out. And I have some ideas, but they're still very rudimentary.
Yeah.
There's a great Colombian architect named Simon Velez, and he's actually made some really interesting ones that may or may not work for my purposes. And then there's another really amazing architect from Vietnam, Vo Trang Nga.
Okay.
And he's winning all these competitions with his bamboo buildings. His approach is a little bit more like weaving it together instead of sort of concrete and bolts like the Colombian method. So I need to get much more involved with those people in a hands-on way.
Yeah. Do you know them or?
I've been corresponding with the office of the architect in Vietnam. I have not been able to really get in touch with the Colombian architect.
Yeah, okay. Maybe you are in the beginning of building some new corporation here.
I fully intend to go about building it, and I think it's entirely marketable. The best part of this is that I can put 4 of these units into a regular shipping container.
Yeah.
My aim really is to use the half-size 18-foot shipping containers I can put 2 in. So basically, for every one of those half-size shipping containers, I can wash clothes for almost 1,000 people a day.
Yeah.
I need a water hookup. I can't do everything. And then I need 5 hours of sunlight to guarantee that I can keep the power up. And then there's some excess power that runs LED lights, a medicine refrigerator, and a couple of other small appliances like a 20 cell phone charger, a nice Wi-Fi router, and the excess electricity is definitely spoken for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically a portable power unit.
Yeah,
it unfolds,
yeah.
It's modular, and then the pieces themselves are all designed to be, with the exception of the Tesla battery, they're all under 60 kilos in weight for each one. So the this could be manipulated or carried by any reasonably strong human being. And ideally, they could use the container itself as part of the unit, but it's not essential to the design.
Looking forward to see that it can be used. I guess it could have served a lot of purpose in many disaster places.
Well, I found actually in my research, like I mentioned, I had a couple of interests that came together for this project, and it just coalesced, really. But I was interested in temporary buildings. I was interested in bamboo. I was interested in solar energy. And then I was interested in helping people in these crises. And I found that in my idea, this is an enzymatic item. One of the first things that people really miss when they get put into these camps is cleanliness. And this really tears away at human dignity, and it eventually causes health problems. And I figured, for many reasons, that this is a really good way to, as efficiently as possible, improve the lives of people in these camps. Mm-hmm. What would happen would be, it sounds very, I've been accused of being sexist when I say this, but what happens, based on my research in these camps, is almost always the women end up doing the laundry, the children are sort of brought into that operation, and more often than not, the men in these camps fight, drink, and this will allow the women to have the free time to manage the children, and also probably have a little bit more time to manage the men. So it ameliorates the situation on a sociological level too.
Yeah, I think in many households, even the women are doing the laundry as well.
And it's a grueling process. I don't know how many people have had to wash their clothes in a bucket, but it really takes a long time. And if you're washing clothes for a family of five, you're gonna really.
I can't even imagine what that is. What that would be. Coming back to something you said earlier about your corporate friends, that they all seem miserable, you said.
Well, that was 20 years ago.
Now yeah.
They're all basically retired.
But why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think a lot of those folks are free spirits, and they got sort of boxed into what their parents wanted them to do or what they felt they had to do. I've always been sort of a rebellious person, so I just don't like rules, and I don't like anything that smacks of what I have to do.
But all these jobs you had along the way to get a salary or to get money, and you always had a boss who told you to do something.
And I'm prepared to work. Yeah.
What wasn't it even more frustrating that you kind of always took the job just to get the money, and then you kind of had to do what the boss told you, had no leverage?
Not really. No, I'm a realist. I'm pragmatic. I know that that by sort of toeing the line, I always had a time limit on the job.
Yeah. Do you know when you started that, when you leave?
Yeah, every job had a shelf life for me. I knew that if I just kept sticking to it and saving money for 3.5 years, then I could get out.
Okay.
And then I'd take that little bit of money, go out, see the world, and then get right back into working. I enjoy working. I feel diminished as a man if I am not employed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so rebellious against... It's obvious you need a hierarchy. And I've done lots of work in restaurants, and it's essential in any environment, any work environment, to have a hierarchy. But with this allows me to work for myself, and this really is a way out.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think it's entirely viable without any of the cost of the bamboo. This kit that fits in two into each half container costs just under $25,000, which I think is fairly reasonable for the amount of good that it'll do. And I suspect that the bamboo will be fairly costly, at least in the beginning, while I'm developing the strut prototypes. But once those are made, they can be quickly grown and assembled in a really economically and environmentally viable way.
Mm-hmm. Do you have sponsors as well, or are you looking for that? Or
I'm indeed looking for sponsors, but I really don't feel like I'm ready to take on a sponsor until I can make these struts.
Yeah.
Once I make these struts, it's game on. I'll definitely actively be looking for them. Currently, it's. I don't think anyone would invest in something that's not quite finished.
Yeah. So it's $25,000 for one unit that can then wash 1,000 T-shirts.
Yeah, well, 750 T-shirts is the 30 to 36 kilos of laundry that it'll do. It's sort of a jokey way of telling you how much.
It's a good way to get to picture it in your mind. Yeah.
Well, and one of the other things too, especially, it's interesting. Once you've finished, you find out all other new things. I've since found out that the real business opportunity in these camps is the washing of the bedding.
Washing of the bedding?
The bedding.
What is that?
I'm not entirely sure exactly what method many of the camps use, but the blankets and the sheets.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
And even the futons, but this is a very important part of the process. Because there's really gruesome diseases that you can get just from sleeping on dirty bedding, scabies, and
who is running these camps? Or when it's things, is it some NGOs or is it governments? Or I have no clue. Are you in contact with someone or?
I'm in contact with the head of the refugee program's office for the UN, and mm-hmm. I'm it's premature for me to try to offer them anything until I've built my first prototype. But I've been in touch with their office, and I've traded a few emails. The man's name is Mr. Bocek, and he's actually Czech, and he happens to be in charge of the UN's refugee program.
Okay.
So I look forward to really completing this in about the next 18 months.
One thing that I wonder, when you have traveled the world and worked in various places and met different cultures, you're a big fan of France. Some big difference or something that stands out when you think about cultures or people?
I'm currently a little disillusioned, is an understatement, with my country. I believe we haven't lived up to our potential.
Your country being US,
And again, I got to emphasize the fact that I certainly hope that the world would eventually try to move beyond countries. I know it's sort of a radical idea, but it would really be something that would bring us together if we didn't have to always wave some flag.
Yeah.
Your flag, my flag, their flag.
Wouldn't it be nice?
I hope humanity aspires to evolve, but my faith is shaken.
Yeah.
But this is my way of trying to do something to help and improve it. Because the statistics indicate that the severity and number of disasters will just increase.
Yeah.
Just because we've stirred the pot so much, global warming is a fact, and the increasing statistics, just from a financial point of view, should convince people to prepare. And the aim of this, once it's assembled, is to keep it stored in central areas around the world, in the containers, in a warehouse, ready to go in whichever direction
is needed. Good.
And another thing too is a lot of people are upset by the refugees and refugee programs and people from other countries coming into your country, but what people have got to keep in mind is that it does not matter who you are or where you live in the world, you can get hit by a natural disaster and you can suddenly be exactly in the same situation. So the people that want to sort of shut it down or turn their back on this because it's, oh, the refugees, and, you know, I'd rather run them off.
Do you feel pushback like that or as well? Or?
I got a little bit of that. Yeah. Again, I was working in an academic community, so they were a lot more liberal about it. But I know amongst my conservative friends, some people would just maybe not want to deal with it at all. That's another reason I made my setup modular, is so that the local people who are hosting these camps are less than thrilled. You can name numbers of examples, like Calais, for example, in France, where there wasn't even an organized camp. They just had numbers of people descend on them. The beauty of this is that they can take it apart, box it back up, and reuse it elsewhere.
Would you have enough sun in Calais to run this?
Ooh, it's pretty cloudy there. I just need 5 hours a day based on my thorough computations. And I was lucky I had two really qualified friends go over my numbers in the electricity department.
Yeah.
One guy is a corporate head of a big company, and another one was a PhD student from Stanford majoring in electrical engineering.
I doubt that in Calais you would have enough sun, at least most a big part of the year, but maybe. But I think they dismantled it anyway, the Calais camp now. Yeah.
Well, that's maybe not the best example, but this is mainly meant
But coming back to what you said earlier about the nations and borders, I think we're going in the other direction now, that we're waving more and more with our flags, and the nation is becoming more and more important what flag you have. It goes in waves, and I think that's the trend at the moment.
It only divides us. I mean, we should just really concentrate on the fact that we're humans. But this could take thousands of years.
Well, it would take a while. I think it goes in cycles. It goes back and forth. What is your next plans now? You're leaving Czech Republic?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the United States. I'm really ready to get home. It's been about 3.5 years. This is sort of my shelf life. I should know the person who said it, but the quote is basically, sometimes you need to get far away from home to find your home. And this is sort of what I do all the time.
Yeah. So Charlottesville, Virginia is your base camp when you're going back from Hollywood, Czech Republic, or India, or whatever.
Yeah,
you go back home.
My family would maybe agree with you.
Yeah.
I sort of return home penniless with ripped clothing and all sorts of ideas, and I get right back to work.
Yeah. So you're going to work there? You have some job lined up? Or?
Currently, no. I'll probably go back and do some cooking work or... it's going to be rudimentary when I get back.
Yeah.
I got to get right to work within days. So yeah. I could either be working in a horse barn or a kitchen just for a little while.
Okay.
Until I get back on my feet. And in the meantime, I'll be keeping
this project
rolling
going.
Along.
Is there anywhere people can find you or read about this project? Or is there someone?
I'm in the process of establishing a website. I have a GoFundMe, but that's sort of secondary. Currently, no. I have a Facebook page, but again, that's not really
for the big
my
public.
Own web page, which I need.
Yeah, yeah. And to round up, you have lived this rebellious life.
Happily rebellious.
Yeah, happily. happily rebellious. I mean, I see that you're a happy person. What would you recommend some young corporate lad or someone who is on the way to get into corporate, just to get a touch of your life?
Just to not lose touch with your essential self. Especially when I was a waiter, I did lots of fine dining waiting, and I was often waiting on elites. And sometimes they were highly out of touch. So I would probably recommend to a youngster, definitely take a little bit of time and travel, because this is really what will open up your mind, and it'll even make your job better and more productive in the long run. So if you're burning to get up the corporate ladder, take a deep breath and go spend 6 months in Asia, or go to the Arctic Circle, or get on a clipper ship, or go down to South America, or get a motorcycle and cross the United States. Just do something where you move, you travel, you encounter people. When you're a traveler, you have to have this kind of humility that really you'll find will develop, and it will improve your ability to have a quality life. I do see lots of my friends who went straight from school, straight into their job, and I don't see how they do it. I couldn't live in the same city for 25 years. Mm-hmm. Power to them, bless them. You know, they have many things that I would aspire to have, such as, you know, children and houses, but I really feel like I've had a quality life, and I've known this for years. I feel like I could drop dead today, and I know I had a full life.
Yeah, yeah. No, travel is it's an amazing way of discovering the world, of course, but also, you know, to understand other people better, which is something you'll have to do every day in wherever you are, trying to get along with other people.
The traveler is really, you know, in many ways a moving target, so you have to be extremely open, aware, adaptable. And the energy you put out really does come back to you.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're fighting it and you're struggling, it'll just intensify. But if you get out there and you have an open mind and you know when to ask for help, you can appreciate the kindness of strangers, it will be a really empowering experience.
Yeah.
Especially if you've just done nothing but go through the schools and the systems and like check the box. It's, you really should force yourself out of your comfort zone, and you'll find a whole new one, a much bigger one, if you can get out and travel.
Yeah. So get out there, travel. Thank you very much, Bert, for this time, and I wish you good luck with your project and your return to the U.S.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So, Ariel, that was Bert Mühlemann. You know Bert. It's a very atypical corporate person.
The word corporate doesn't come to mind when I think of Bert, but then, you know, I feel that way about you sometimes too, and you were in corporate, so... when I listen to Bert, he reminds me a lot of people, actually, that I know in Prague, except that he's definitely got an altruistic mentality around things, that it's not just, hey, I'm going to party my way through the world and experience and, you know, go back home broke and whatever. But he really wants to make things better and is willing to pay the price, so to speak, for, you know, getting the capital he needs to do the next thing. And also that how important it was that he actually was traveling in different places in order to get that inspiration for his new invention, which would be amazing if it's functional and could actually work. I mean, having, you know, we've been in some countries where we've experienced the lack of sanitation and how intense that can be. And I remember thinking at different times, oh, wow, you know, this is just 10 days or 6 days. But a long period of time, it is, at least coming from the Western world, it feels degrading or exhausting to sometimes, you know, be working in a developing country kind of way. So I think it would be amazing if.
But also what he said, it can happen to anyone, anytime.
That really, yeah, struck a chord for me, because I think, well, especially as, you know, we have walked into various circles around the world where people are very anti-refugee or poor people. And we ourselves have experienced what it can be like to go from a lot to less, a lot less, and not even as dramatic as somebody who's been in a massive hurricane or earthquake or whatnot, or just living in that all the time. And I think people forget. It's like the first time that I had an accident, and I was, you know, young and vital and thinking, oh gosh, why are those old people so slow or whatever? And then suddenly you are that person who can hardly get up the stairs or can't get up off the floor and or whatever it is, in this case, not be able to use a shower or whatnot. So, you know, I think that what he was saying about traveling, I am also, as a traveler, a core believer of that, because I think it does give us perspective on our own lives and empathy for other people. So, and I think whether you're out in the world or in your personal life or in your work life, I think it's a vital piece that would make everyone better in what they do, you know, not only in personal life, but when you're working, you know, the environment that we work in, maybe not as dramatic as what he was talking about, but having a level of empathy for people that we're working with, even in inside or outside of corporate, any kind of work environment, is truly vital for, I don't know, compassion is necessary to exist without misery, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he certainly, definitely has a lot of empathy. That's,
yeah, I felt that. Yeah. And I've seen his device.
Yeah.
And I know what it's like when you're trying to work out the bugs just from watching people go through it with software and other things, and it could be really
great. I hope we can get that up and running. Then it will be a corporation.
Well, or a corporation that might support it. So corporate's not always bad. Because they're often the ones that are looking for a way to balance the reputation with doing good things like this and supporting things like this. So that's the positive of corporate, are the resources that
I
they can offer.
I hope we can sort that out. But I admire him for really going for the life he had. I would never have been able to do it myself.
Well, so I was thinking it's so opposite. When I started listening, I thought this is so opposite. But at the same time, something that I remember when we first met, you were like, that would be cool, the freedom and the, you know, exploring. But you also got to hear, you know, the other side of things is, you know, The courage that you have to be willing to kind of let your ego go.
Yeah, and also to live with that uncertainty. I would personally never been able to do it in my.
Well, even now I'm watching how we're handling it, and it's in moments, you know, when we have our uncertainty. Yeah. It's tricky. Yeah. So, for sure.
Yeah. So he will be a missed person here in Prague 7 for sure, but.
Thanks to technology, we can see what's going on with him going forward. And all of you can as well. We'll hopefully have some links for all of you guys to...
Yeah, to his portable washing facility. Yeah, exactly. We put a link into the Facebook page. And there he explains a little bit more about it. And again, if you like the show, share it with someone and give us a review.
We really, really appreciate the time that you guys take to go into Apple and scroll down and figure out the not always incredibly intuitive way to review, and it lets people know that we are, you know, real and people are listening. And the more listeners we have, the better we can make the show for you. And we appreciate that support. And as Matt said, sharing with people that you think. Episodes that you've enjoyed the most as well. I really appreciate that a lot.
Thank you very much. Next week, normally, I mean, we might do a duo, Ariel and I, or we'll have a very special guest from Sweden. We'll see how we're figuring that out.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Have a great week.
Have a great corporate week.
Thanks for listening to the Corporate Corner. If you want to know more about us, read our blog and see notes about today's show and link to the podcast, go to our website, www.thecorporatecorner.net. There you also find links to our social media presence as well as means to support us. If you want to get in touch or share a corporate experience, write us at info@thecorporatecorner.net. We would love to hear from you. Have an excellent corporate week and talk to you soon.